This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 8 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're joined by Darren from Earl Grey. How's it going, Darren?
It's good. I've put down my coffee mug of Earl Grey, and I'm ready to drink some futuristic future tea on our discussion today.
Sounds like a plan. Isn't Earl Grey futuristic future tea, though?
Well, it depends on what kind of mug you have it in. I mean, it is a very old tea, but, Captain Picard always had those fancy, glassware with the little, the stem that just, I'm surprised those things didn't always fall over and break when the ship was shaking around. You never saw a broken teacup except on Sulu's ship, so...
Oh, that's true. Maybe they have like magnetic, gravity stabilizer thingies.
Mini internal dampeners.
Built into the inside cups themselves. The cup. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That seems like a very good use of resources.
So for people who don't know, which I'm sure is not many people, seeing as how you guys have like three times as many listeners as us, Darren is one of the co-hosts of Earl Grey. So, but you've never been on this show before.
And I have not.
And as is tradition with this show, we always like to sort of get a perspective from where you're coming from when it comes to Star Trek and whatnot. So I take it you're a fan of Star Trek?
I am, just a little bit. no, obviously my favorite of the series would be Star Trek The Next Generation. And along with my co-hosts, Philip Gilfus and Daniel Prue. We talk about that every week over on Earl Grey, part of the Trek FM network. And one great way to catch how I started in Star Trek would be to listen to our first episode, Imzadi Relationships, where we all talked about how we got into Star Trek The Next Generation. And then you could listen to episode 2 and then 3, and then, before you know it, you'll be caught up to episode 90+. I've really enjoyed Star Trek since, my childhood. Watched a good portion of TNG in the early 90s live, and I was the action figure, not keep in the box guy. So I was opening up my Playmates toys. I had the bridge, I had the the Enterprise, the transporter, and that's really got me into what got me interested in filmmaking. Is I'd make my own little movies with my action figures and do live action the parts that I couldn't recreate. And my friends put up with me a lot. Like, this was my spring break. It was like, hey guys, come on over for 3-4 days and let's make a movie with my Star Trek action figures. Wouldn't that be fun? And they did, and it was fun. So but just really have enjoyed Trek from the very beginning for me. And that led into DS9 and to Voyager. And I definitely, which I know is a popular opinion, I think one of the ways that kind of helps shape what your favorite Trek is where you were in your life when it came out. Were you in college? Were you in high school? Were you, married with kids? And what's great is it will continuously kind of change and evolve. Now watching certain episodes again, having, a young daughter, totally changes the perspective, when you're watching Data and him fighting for his daughter and other, great episodes that were already great, but you just get a whole new lens. So, but just really enjoy Star Trek, and it's always fun talking about the people who have been privileged enough to work in this great franchise.
So I guess, so we know you're a fan of Next Generation and all that good stuff, but I guess as is relevant to this discussion, perhaps, what are your thoughts on the JJ-verse movies, in particular Into Darkness?
In particular Into Darkness? It's a good film. I mean, it's a fun... I definitely feel that JJ is going to probably be better suited for this upcoming Star Wars movie he's making. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's coming out this December. It's going to be a pretty big deal. But No, I mean, I don't personally have anything against the JJ verse. I mean, even the coin term is just is so funny how that came about. But it's I guess TOS has never been my favorite even to begin with. I just have never really gotten into it. I haven't watched it as much. It's there's definitely great episodes that I enjoy, and I enjoy the characters. I probably enjoy the movies most of that cast more than the series. But it just it was. I'm glad that it brought more people into the fandom, and especially as now that we're turning out more Blu-rays and just everything's on Netflix and there's just so many ways to reach Trek nowadays. I think that's one of the greater contributions of Star Trek 2009 and Star Trek Into Darkness is just launching people into this huge universe of Trek. But as the movies themselves, you know, they're fun. They're, I think, I'm in the camp where I feel that Star Trek needs to continue to evolve as it comes out. If we get another series, you know, it can't be like Next Gen. It can't be like DS9. It's going to have to be more for this time, just like the movies. Like I agree that you do need to have them evolve to some sense, but it's a very fine line between the medium evolving versus it still being Star Trek. And that probably is just going to fall down to personal opinion when it's all said and done. But you know, yeah, it still has the Enterprise. It still has awesome, you know, awesome action, and just, it's a fun ride. I enjoy them.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking, I'm sort of burying the lead here, but today's topic of discussion is Tomorrowland, the new movie, which was directed by Brad Bird and co-written by Brad Bird and our good friend Damon Lindelof, who we've covered at great length on
this
show.
Oh, David.
He was, you know, a writer of a number of movies, all of which we have tackled into a great degree. And whenever he has a new movie come out, just like with all of our creators, we touch back with them and see what's going on. So today's our sort of Damon Lindelof supplemental episode where we look at his new movie, Tomorrowland. So, John, would you want to give us sort of a synopsis of Tomorrowland?
Sure.
Honestly, I don't think I'd be able to.
Well, Tomorrowland is it's a fable about the smartest and most creative people in the world find an alternate dimension, I guess, in which to exist and build the futuristic society that we had all dreamed of. And of course, the portal to it is through the It's a Small World ride originally in Disney World. And you follow a girl who finds this land by way of your typical sort of spirit guide character who takes you to the grizzled old burnout who gets them back into Tomorrowland so that they can work their magic to change things for the better.
I think that's a pretty good description.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before we talk about the script, which is the main reason why we're here, I thought maybe we should do this sort of in reverse and start at the end and sort of work our way forward and talk about everything that's not the script. Okay.
So if we're starting at the end, does that mean we're giving our 5-star rating to start with?
I guess you could do that if you want to. Spoilers. No, but okay, for one thing, there's a lot of Star Trek collaborators who worked on this thing. I mean, the crew is almost reads like the crew of the J.J. Verse movies. You've got the music by Michael Giacchino. You've got Lindelof, obviously acting as a writer and producer. What's his name? Jeffrey Chernoff is also a producer. He was the production manager on the movies, the line producer, if you will, or whatever you want to call him. There's a lot of people like that. John Knoll, you know, was doing some visual effects and everything. There's a lot of people who had worked on Star Trek in the past who are working on this thing now or just did. And there's a lot of cool stuff in terms of the production. Also, shout out to Claudio Miranda, the cinematographer, who was almost the cinematographer of Star Trek Beyond, but not quite. Too bad. Anyway, so what did you guys think about that stuff? Darren, what did you think about Brad Bird's work on the movie as a director? Are you a Brad Bird fan?
No, I am a Brad Bird fan. I mean, he's, you know, done The Incredibles, Mission Impossible, Gross Protocol, which was great. My wife and I are huge Mission Impossible fans, more from the 60s TV show than from the early 90s movies. But Iron Giant, you know, his work on The Simpsons, you know, he's just done, he's done few big pieces, but every big piece he's done, you know, Ratatouille is just really strong and really well done. And Tomorrowland is no exception. It's just continuing on, you know, his just visually, you know, when I was in film school and people would say, well, what does a director do? I'd say, well, you're in my mind, your writer is creating this world. Your producer is presenting options to the director on, like, can you do option A or option B? Like, he's starting to refine it. But the director is the one who really has to have the vision, has to totally have the buy-in to create this world and to take you on the journey of the story. And yeah, and for Brad Bird, he does, you know, he does a great job of immersing you into this world, which has one foot in, like John said, this alternate reality Tomorrowland, which is not exactly like the theme park attraction, yeah. But it's pretty close. And then, you know, this other, you know, with kind of a Tesla, Jules Verne, State Fair inspiration, like, thread that kind of goes through the entire film. Overall, I really enjoy his work in this picture.
What did you think about the direction, John?
There were things that I didn't necessarily care for. I felt there were decisions that were made. How the movie opened, I think, made it more difficult to get into. I thought that there was a different point of attack that he could have chosen that would have made it easier for me to plug into it and probably shaved a couple of minutes off of the film. I thought that when it got going, you know, the moments where it was clicking were really wonderful and visually just marvelous to look at. I really think that the, you know, when you first enter that world and you're introduced to it through young Frank Walker falling and flying around, it's just, you know, it captures everything that's wonderful about a magical movie where you're just there for the ride and you're enjoying it and you're learning the way the character is. And it's just, you know, a marvelous experience. You know, it's an imperfect movie. Again, there are other decisions later down the line that I think I'm not the director and I'm not a director, but I would say that, there are decisions where had I been in the room with him and he said, I'm going to do it this way, I would have said, I probably would maybe, you know, not do it that way. I feel it's an uneven film, but it's an enjoyable film.
Yeah, the direction was something about the movie which really impressed me. I mean, throughout the entire duration, I was sort of in awe of the way that the film was constructed. You know, like on a scene-by-scene basis, I would say, you know, I thought the set pieces were really solid. I thought that the choices that were being made, you know, from a directing standpoint were very spot on. And I am a Brad Bird fan. I thought that Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol was awesome. And, you know, his animation stuff is really good, too. And I was also, you know, very struck by, I mean, like, I liked the opening and the way that they sort of got into it that way. Mm. Thought the performances were really good. I think, I mean, George Clooney is always amazing, but I think that Bird got a performance out of Clooney, which he hasn't given in a long time. And like I said this, I think, on the 602 Club, but it reminded me of the George Clooney of From Dusk Till Dawn and that sort of, like, angry energy. And it really came through, and he's really good at that stuff. And the girl who I forget her name, who I've never seen in anything before, I thought that she was really good as well. And, you know, Hugh Laurie is always cool.
Are you talking about Britt Robertson as Casey?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's her. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, a new face, which there were a lot of new faces in this film, which I think helped it.
Yeah. Yeah, the other girl, Athena, I don't know her name, but
Rafe Cassidy.
Yeah, she was awesome, too.
Yeah, she was fantastic. She really was.
She's going places. Like, she's just kicking off her career, and it's, yeah, she acting as an automaton is difficult, to say the least, and she carries it very well.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the photography, like, we touched on that just for a second ago, you know, shot by Claudio Miranda. Like, this guy is he's just the best, you know? I mean, he did Tron Legacy. That movie is freaking amazing, you know? And he did, I think he won an Oscar for Life of Pi, because, you know, whatever, I guess.
Because everyone won an Oscar for Life of Pi.
Yeah, whatever. But, you know, he's also done lots of really good stuff, too. And it was cool to see, like, someone who's, like, as visually progressive and everything as Bird teaming up with someone who can light a scene like nobody's business and getting this gorgeous look with a weird aspect ratio, 2.2 to 1. And that's pretty awesome, you know? And then the editing. Walter Murch, who I think may have been fired at some point. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, because there were two editors listed on it.
Yeah, which isn't an odd thing, but I think I remember hearing that Walter Murch got fired at some point. But I mean, Walter Murch, the god of editing, you know, the guy
they took his pin away.
Yeah, they took his pin away. But he, I mean, I thought that the editing in this was really solid. And then there's the music, which is by Giacchino, who is, of course, a Star Trek dude. What did you guys think about the music? Now, Darren, you said that you were just listening to
man.
It before.
It was really good. I mean, I'm definitely a good... I'm glad you said it, because I have never known how to pronounce his last name, unfortunately. I've never heard it spoken
I'm pretty
enough.
Sure it's Giacchino, but
Giacchino.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, he's just... He is going to be one... He is one of the greats now. He is just... He is heading up there with the likes of the great composers of the last few decades. I mean, Jurassic World, Inside Out, Tomorrowland, Jupiter Ascending, you know, Star Trek Into Darkness, a ton of Fringe, you know, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, Cars 2, Star Tours, Adventures Continues. I mean, can't forget that. But no, he just has a sound, and it's his sound. And it's so hard to not do like a Williams sound or to do a you know, a Horner sound. And I mean, to a point, but you can tell he's inspired by some of their other works, but I feel like he still has his own sound. And in Tomorrowland, as soon as I left the theater, I went and bought the score on iTunes and just listened to it, because I love the main theme. I love the main motif that, you know, that rose through it. And overall, just I think the music helped capture that sense of hope that they were trying to push in, something you kind of get like with a Rocketeer score or something like that, where you just have these motifs and these moments of excitement.
Yeah. What did you think about it, John?
Well, I think it's funny you mentioned Williams, because something as a diehard Star Wars fan that always plays on my mind is, you know, if Williams can't, you know, this is going to be an impolitic way to put it, but if he can't live long enough to complete the Star Wars sequel trilogy, you know, who's going to step in? And that's something that I've often thought about. This score was reminiscent enough of Williams for me that my impression walking out of it was, oh, Giacchino. Could step in and do this score, because there are definite moments of it where it sounded like a Williams score, and that's not a knock by any stretch of the imagination, but it was something that was it was very familiar. I enjoyed the score very much. I thought that it served as a good voice of the film.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement that, you know, he's the guy. I mean, I think everyone thought that he was going to be the guy to score Episode 7 back before they said it was Williams. Like, I was shocked when they said that Williams was doing the score.
Especially because of his collaboration with JJ.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. You know, I was like, really? It's not Giacchino? That's crazy. And while I do love Giacchino's work, which I could be pronouncing that wrong, by the way, so don't quote me on
that. Well, no, the thing is, you've said it officially, and even if you're wrong, you're right now.
All right, fair enough. I like that.
Michael G.
Yeah.
I wasn't blown away by this one. You know, I've been blown away by him in the past numerous times. I wasn't blown away this time, and it's not that there was anything wrong with it. There was just nothing about it which stood out to me as being, you know, like one of those where I'm like, I've got to get that and listen to it obsessively. But it was still really good. So that's all cool. Okay, so we've talked about the production and how it's grade A, top notch. Now let's get into the real game begins. Quote Jim Carrey,
the story
anniversary. Yeah, let's talk about the writing. John, what did you think about the writing in this movie?
I am not as willing to saddle the script problems with Lindelof as I have been in the past, because as I understand it, the ampersand versus the word and is an important distinction in script writing. Mm.
Yes.
I felt that I went into this with an expectation of the bottom falling out of the third act because Lindelof's name was on it. Be that fair or unfair, that's when I see his name on a movie, my immediate presumption is the first two thirds are going to blow what's left of my hair back. And the last act is just going to make me leave the theater saying, man, I can't, why doesn't somebody keep him in check? But, there was nothing about the writing or that exploded for me. That was, you know, there was no bits of dialogue that were phenomenal. There was nothing that I was walking out, but it was a well-constructed, and I don't mean this as a pejorative, kids movie. Mike, at your suggestion, I took my daughters to go see this. They loved it. They thought it was fantastic. And seeing it through their eyes, I think I looked at it maybe more forgivingly than had I gone alone or with, you know, friends of a similar age. I will say that the end feels a little rushed in some respects. It feels a little loose or looser than it should be. But this will sound like an insult, but it's not meant as such. It was good enough, you know, like it served its purpose and it got you to, you know, it was constructed right. I guess is the only way I can really convey it.
All right. So you would say it was decent then?
Yeah, it's a decent
script.
But
let me ask you about this because you brought it up. You said that you were expecting the bottom to fall out of the third act.
Yeah.
And do you think that that happened or not?
No, I don't.
Okay. And when you said that because of the distinction, now I know based on everything that the two of them have said that Brad Bird and Damon Lindelof were, you know, intimately involved in this movie, you know, together, you know, they were intimately involved in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it really was a team effort.
Okay.
And, what do you think about that side of things? Or maybe we should wait. Let's, Darren.
Yeah, let's wait.
I guess before we get into that, Darren, what did you think about, the writing in this movie?
There you go. Well, you planted the seed, and he can turn over that a couple times in the head while I go. No, I agree a lot with those points, John. Upon reflection, the way they started it with the whole kind of flash forward, flashback kind of thing was a little weird, especially because it was so like, what's the word? Not raw, but just like, you know, hey, let's talk. Hey, oh, I don't know. No, you talk. Oh, no. And it's just like, is the movie starting? What is going on? Like, are we doing an addition? But that aside, the overall theme and the threads of this movie, I loved. The like I stated before with the music, the Tesla, Edison, Jules Verne, you know, bright future, Walt Disney is included in that, you know, of people, though not stated, and the World's Fair aspect. I've probably, like you too, I follow Doug Drexler, a Star Trek alum, I guess you could say, who worked for many years on Next Gen and other shows in the production. He's a World's Fair, you know, just he loves it. I mean, I think he has like a luminary like in his backyard, and it's fun seeing someone like that when they talk about the World's Fair, because they were there, it captured them in a way that, you know, we haven't had something like that, you know, in our experience, or at least speaking for me personally. So that I kept thinking about the way Doug talks about the World's Fair and about how, you know, other people talk about just that hope that it inspired of, let's look to the future, let's look to what could be, you know, great big beautiful tomorrow, you know, small world after all. Yeah. And I love that part, how they wove that in to, you know, going through the small world. You know, I got my 1960s Tomorrowland pin right here, so next time I ride the ride I can get selected. But yeah, it, you know, it's just that fun ride where, yeah, you got to definitely put belief kind of on suspension for a good chunk of the movie. But once they sell you on like the big concepts of, you know, the alternate reality and the, you know, what if a bunch of people, once you get the pitch really of like all these people getting together to create this beautiful tomorrow, then you can just kind of sit back and just enjoy it as the characters are exploring it for you. That's another aspect I really liked, is how the story was revealed to the protagonist. Just, which is also how it's revealed to us. You know, I feel she was a very strong character, definitely made her own decisions, made her own choices, like was guiding and impacting. I mean, her choices actually directly impact, you know, that clock. It impacts the story, and that's what you need for a strong protagonist. They're not along for the ride. They are creating the story. And, you know, I'm always on the lookout now for you know, female protagonists I can show my daughter and be like, hey, look, you'd be like, you know, like Casey Newton, and I'll be the crazy, you know, ex-NASA yeah. engineer that, you know, tries to make my own inventions. But no, overall, you know, I definitely enjoyed this movie, and it's definitely one I'm going to get on my shelf, because, you know, I believe in what it's trying to say. Whether or not that was communicated well in the trailers or in the marketing, probably not. But what you actually get in the movie, I feel, is something worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're both saying, I guess. You know, to speak to Darren's point, that I think that the themes in the movie and the overall message of thinking about things positively instead of negatively is really kind of interesting and cool and good, especially for kids. You know, I mean, like John was saying, I think that they kind of hit the nail on the head, like really freaking hard. And I think that this is a case where I never really thought about this as far as like Lindelof is concerned. But I think that maybe the bottom does drop out of the third act. Okay. When they're like, okay, this is becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. Spoilers, everyone. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Spoilers. But
we're getting deep into the stories, obviously.
Right. Yeah. This is becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, if we stop telling people that the world is going to end, then the world's not going to end. I don't buy that. I don't buy that that's going to work, especially if the end is coming in 2 months or whatever it
no.
is.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I understand it in terms of a storytelling device and blah, 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 blah. I don't think it works dramatically.
Okay, so, but since we're in spoiler territory here, what yeah. works about it for me is that the, you know, this vision that they're giving people, this hopelessness, I very much read, like, it drives somebody finally to basically say, F it, and push the button, as it were, and start the end of everything. And I think that there's, in a sense, Hugh Laurie's character is, Governor Nix, is very much a kid-friendly version of Agent Smith from The Matrix, because he's the one that has the diatribe where he's like, screw it, you people are unbelievable. You deserve your unhappiness. I don't care anymore. You know, like, it's very much a, you know, it's not a perfect ending, because I felt that Governor Nix's fate was not, he didn't quite deserve the fate that he got. I felt he deserved a shot at some sort of redemption, as opposed to a semi-comic, you know.
That's because there's no one in Tomorrowland. That was my problem with
until
the
very
act.
End.
But even at the very end, there was like 50 people, like, in this entire city.
Half of them were robots, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, maybe, you know, maybe he kicked everybody out, not just Frank Walker.
Well, what did you think, John, of The Secret? Because I think that meaning through the majority of the film, there's this secret of, like, something bad's going to happen, and then it leads into, well, she might be able to change it, and they keep you going on a string for a long time until it finally, you know, the shoe drops, and it's like, oh, it's this, you know, make me think of Paycheck. It's like, oh, if we see the future, we predict the future, and then we cause the future. But what did you think of how they portrayed that of, you know, did that keep you engaged the entire time, or as it kept me engaged? I didn't figure it out until the shoe dropped. I don't know if you're just smarter than me, but
no. Her thread kept me engaged specifically because of the idea that it wasn't even that, you know, she was you know, going to be the one to end the machinery, but she's the one that figured out that's how she affects the future. Is she's the one that points out, you guys are telling everybody that it's hopeless.
They don't even know what their machine actually does.
Right. So that's how she changes the future for everybody, is she's the one that points out to them, or to everybody but Governor Nix, because he obviously knows what he's doing. But she's the one that figures it out. Hey, you know, here's the... And it's as simple as, it's foreshadowed in a sense by her father working on that machine, and, you know, in the beginning, and... He can't get it to work, and she just moves one tiny piece over.
Right.
She moves a clamp, and all of a sudden it's working. She says, "Ah, you'd have figured it out eventually."
Right. She just figured it out sooner.
Right. And so now, you know, to be fair, I'm not saying by any stretch that this is a perfect film, or that it's, you know, like, I'm not shouting from the rooftops that it's fantastic, but, well, I think that it's a very good film, and I think that's very much worth seeing. And I did like the trade. I guess you could say the trademark Lindelof, you know, secret that keeps the plot moving until the big reveal at the end. You know, like, that's
the
definitely
mystery
a hallmark,
box, or whatever you want to call it,
the MacGuffin, or what. Yeah. Although the MacGuffin, I don't think you're ever supposed to find out exactly what it is, or who cares.
Well, the MacGuffin, I think, is more what you see. But the characters don't see, if you're going back to pure Hitchcock. But yeah, but I know what you mean.
The MacGuffin is the thing that doesn't matter.
Right. So it's not that.
Well, this thing very much matters. Yes, it does. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. The same principle.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right. So what did you guys think about this? Now, I mean, we've talked a little bit, John, you were saying how you were expecting a certain quality drop and everything as you got to the end and everything like that. But I guess I'm thinking more thematically and whatnot. How do you see this fitting into the rest of Lindelof's career? Now I know we've talked about, you know, for those people who don't know, I guess, because we have discussed all of his movies on the show, but for those people who may have missed them, you know, things like, I'm not going down a list here, but, you know, Prometheus, Cowboys and Aliens, World War Z, Star Trek Into Darkness, and then getting into his TV stuff, you've got Lost, The Leftovers, which Now, I haven't seen The Leftovers. I was planning on watching an episode. Do you guys watch The Leftovers?
Nope.
Okay, because from what I understand, it's some sort of, like, you know, left behind kind of scenario where the apocalypse occurs and basically a bunch of people disappear and there's, like, you know, five dudes left, you know, to inherit the Earth. And that, to me, seems like kind of the opposite of what... I don't know the take that they have on that thing, but it seems like kind of the opposite of what Tomorrowland is going for, you know? They're saying, like... there's all this apocalyptic fiction in the media these days, and maybe we should stop doing that and do something, you know, optimistic, like Star Trek.
Like World War Z and Prometheus. Yeah. And,
right, exactly.
Like I've made my channels what's broadcasting on this antenna.
Exactly, you know? I mean, so it seems kind of strange that he would be doing this. Maybe it's a self-reflective thing. Maybe I'm, you know, giving my take before you guys, so sorry.
No.
But Darren, what do you think about the way that this movie fits into Lindelof's career?
Well, I haven't seen as many pieces of his career as you guys have, but just thinking, on the base premises of these movies, maybe it is the pendulum swinging back, you know, to... Tomorrowland, it's Disney, it's everything's happy. I mean, not everything's happy, and there's drama, and there's, you know, it's a constructed three-act story, but it is interesting, you know, coming out in 2015 in this time where, I mean, look at sci-fi in the last decade. Like, it is all, not all, but a lot of it is, you know, it's grit. And it's Blade Runner-esque, and it's dark, and it's, you know, let's shove as much sand as we can in our eyes, you know. It's not all like that, but we get a lot of that. And, you know, but I love science fiction. I mean, my handle on Twitter is Dr. Sci-Fi, and, you know, I love, you know, historical science fiction as well as new science fiction. And, yeah, there's a lot of classic sci-fi where it was, you know, airships and space balloons and, you know, just not... just like hope, but just fun, and like, look at what we can still, you know, reach for, which is, I think, one of the core principles of Star Trek, is very similar to what we get in Tomorrowland, is, you know, we will, you know, overcome our differences and our mistakes, and we will reach for the stars, and we will find what's out there, and we will prosper. You know, we will live long and prosper. I think in that regard, Tomorrowland would line up more with, you know, his Star Trek Into Darkness and, you know, other works. It's not Tomorrowland Into Darkness, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think that an undercurrent in Lindelof's works, and I've been no great defender of his. I've always said, you know, talented but flawed, you know, it's basically how I've seen him, but I think that Tomorrowland does fit in because he may focus on, you know, weird islands and alternate dimensions and apocalyptic tales, but they always end on a note of hope. World War Z ends on a note of hope. Lost ends very beautifully and hopefully, you know, where everything sort of turns
around.
Don't
say it. I haven't seen it.
I can spoil it for you.
Does
because
Lost
when the
even
cool
end?
When
I
the
mean,
Kool-Aid man breaks in at the end and they find out that they just needed a new beverage, everything's great. But
all right. Okay.
There's very much a thread of hope in all of his works, except possibly Cowboys and Aliens, which I have actually gone to great lengths to try to forget most of.
But Cowboys and Aliens is what brought you to us. So
it is.
Show. So, you know,
it's all part of
Lindelof's
plan.
Every cloud has a silver lining.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I kind of gave my thoughts on it already. That was my big high concept, how this fits into Lindelof's career idea there with the whole post-apocalyptic whatnot. But, yeah, I mean, I think that this guy has, I think what one of the cool things about his career is that he does a lot of sci-fi stuff, but he doesn't like pigeonhole himself into just like one subgenre. You know, he's got a sci-fi Western, quite literally. He's got a Star Trek, you know, movie. He's got, the alien, you know, movie with the horror and the whatnot, and then he's got this, which is the kids' movie. And to speak to what you were saying, John, I think it is really cool how you have all of these top-notch filmmakers teaming up to make a kids' movie. I mean, one of the things that I always think about is, like, Spy Kids, and how that movie, yeah. you know, directed by Robert Rodriguez, coming, you know, hot off the heels of, like, his El Mariachi trilogy and whatnot. And I got really excited about, you know, the idea of a kids movie being directed by one of the greatest action directors of our time. And I kind of thought the same thing here until I realized that actually Brad Bird pretty much does make kids movies, but yeah. it's the same concept. You know, it's all of these top-notch filmmakers, like people like Walter Murch, who literally wrote the book on editing. You know, yeah. he like those guys all teaming up to make a big action kids movie, I think is really cool, you know, because kids deserve to have good movies too, you know?
Yep.
But regardless of that, you know, I think it's cool how it fits into Lindelof's career in that it adds another level of diversity to his sci-fi stuff. One more thing, which I kind of forgot to touch on, I don't even know where I would squeeze it in, but the idea that this is an adaptation of a theme park section. Are you guys big Disney fans?
Yes.
Yes.
Me too. I got married at that frickin' place.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
I have to say that I love Tomorrowland, you know, and I love the fact that it, like, they incorporated, like, Space Mountain and all that stuff. And
the skyline, yeah.
The sky, yeah, you know, and one of the things which I think is really cool about this is, you know, how do you adapt a theme park into a movie? And I think what they really did, which is really cool, is in addition to taking, like, the visual aesthetics and all that stuff, and also another really cool thing, I was lucky enough to go to the Disneyland in France a couple years back.
Oh, Disneyland and, Paris.
Yeah, and the when they get into, like, the Jules Verne stuff and the Paris stuff and everything, like, that aesthetic reminds me a lot of the aesthetic of the Tomorrowland in the Disneyland Paris, which I think is kind of cool, whether or not it was intentional. But I think
their Space Mountain looks totally different than any other Space Mountain. It's got much more
creepy
bits on it.
Very Jules Verne-y, and it's twice as intense, and it's awesome. Anyway, and they still have the original Star Tours there, which I never thought I'd see again in my life, but oh my God, the best thing ever. Anyway, in terms of adapting a theme park into a movie, I think that they did that as good as any movie could, because they took what that theme park was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a optimistic vision of the future.
Yeah.
And that's what the movie is. It's not a beat for beat retelling of, you know, the Haunted Mansion or anything like that. It is spiritually an adaptation of a theme park. And even to the point of, like, you know, cramming as many weird, crazy technologies and ideas into it as they possibly could. And I thought that was super cool. Do you guys have any thoughts on that or not?
Yeah, I was going to say, it makes me think of it really comes down to the pin in my mind, because it's the pin, it's Tomorrowland, it's a symbol. And that's what they really captured with the title, with the whole, you know, just emphasis of the picture. Is they're like, okay, yeah, we're not going to say, oh, well, let's make a movie about, you know, waiting in line, and oh, look, here's a Star Wars portion, here's Buzz Lightyear. No, it's we're not describing the land. We're describing just the message and the spirit of what that land is, and that's just encapsulated. It's in the pin. It's in the title, which is what I think, you know, drew people to go see this movie. I mean, they could have called it something else. They didn't have to call it Tomorrowland. They didn't have to line it up with, you know, a theme park, you know, land, but they did. And I think that's because it's tapping into this, you know, like you said, Jules Verne, you know, just hope for the future. You know, what's 1986 going to be like? You know, maybe a little farther in the future, but yeah, I think they do a great job of capturing and harnessing that, and it's fun. Yeah, the little homages they place in the, you know, the Space Mountain and the skyline, and just because it's like how you have to be able to have your actors deliver the world, the word, we're going to go to Tomorrowland, like with a straight face, like in a convincing manner, you know, and they do, and it works.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on this movie? Anyone?
Yeah. I think that it's definitely worth seeing. I would actually encourage people to go see it. It's going to be off the big screen pretty soon. But I do think
it's getting harder.
Yeah. I do think that visually if for no other reason, even if you don't like it as much as I did or my kids did or anybody else did, visually, it's a wonderful film to watch. And I hope, because I know that it's had trouble finding traction in the theaters, I hope that it finds a new life when it does come onto on demand or, you know, Blu-ray or whatever. I hope that it finds the audience it deserves.
Darren?
Yeah, I agree in all those points. I feel it'll probably get more legs once it is easier to access. You know, I picked up the Blu-ray of Tomorrowland. Why don't you come over and watch it? Oh, this is a great movie. You know, I kind of wish I'd seen it. You know, I can definitely see that scenario happening. But yeah, I don't think this is going to, you know, be the ship that launches, you know, a new Pirates of the Caribbean franchise of movies. But for what it is, for this moment, and that's really what it is. It's a picture of a moment of like, hey, let's take this moment. Let's focus on, you know, focus on the future and focus on these positive things. And for that, I think it does it very, very well. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's got, you know, good characters. It's got, you know, well acted pieces. You know, George Clooney's totally channeling a lot of Danny Ocean, I feel. You know, he's just kind of like, I kind of care, but also I kind of don't. And, you know, well, you know, it's got Nixie Tubes. I mean, any movie that's got Nixie Tubes in it, you know, you gotta love that. But yeah, no, overall, definitely a good picture. Like I said, it's going to go in the collection as soon as it comes out, and we're going to see it again this Thursday, although we had to travel a little farther to find a theater because it is starting to dissipate.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Yeah, you know, it's weird because when I first watched this movie, like the day before it came out, I was like, oh, this is really good. This is really cool. I really like what they're doing in here, and there's a lot of awesome stuff in here. And I left the theater thinking like, yeah, that was a good movie. And then like a couple days later, I was like, what happened in that movie again? Like, I totally forgot what was going on in that movie, and it completely left my mind, you know. And I actually had to go back and rewatch this again yesterday in order to prep for this movie. Mm-hmm. And the second time through, you know, looking at it perhaps through a more critical eye, also not watching it at 3 o'clock in the morning, I appreciated it more and yet also saw more of the flaws. And I think my overall opinion of it hasn't really changed much. I think it is a decent movie for sure, and yet it has some pretty big problems with it. And while I would recommend it, there's a lot of stuff out there which I would recommend first. So take that as you will. All right. Before we wrap this up, we kind of have to touch on this. You know, once again, you know, this year is the crappiest year in the history of Star Trek. Another Star Trek creator has passed away, and that's James Horner, who, of course, is responsible for the music for Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, as well as having won a couple Oscars for his work on Titanic and, you know, being nominated for everything. He did the music for Aliens, The Rocketeer, which we were just talking about, the music for The Rocketeer, like all this stuff. And we just thought that we should acknowledge that because, I mean, his work on Star Trek is awesome. I mean, like, I was just listening to the Wrath of Khan soundtrack again today, and I'm like, my God, you know, there's some stuff where, you know, there are times where I give James Horner crap for, like, recycling, you know, music cues and whatnot, but you listen to some of the set piece music in Wrath of Khan, and it's just like, God, this guy was solid.
Oh, please, that music from, you know, the surprise attack, when it it starts up, it's just like you hear that and you're like, oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like that is just that is such a perfect piece of music.
And then to follow it up with, you know, when he turns the tables, you know.
Yeah.
Which I mean it's yeah. And then there's the Mutara Nebula stuff. It's just like what's going
on. And
yeah,
you can't go without mentioning Willow, the theme of which to this day will still move me to tears. I mean, he did Braveheart and Aliens and everything, but like Willow is a very overlooked soundtrack.
I totally overlooked it.
Yes.
Just like Willow.
Yeah, no, he is one of the, you know, the godfathers of composers now. And just, I mean, from the 80s onward, I mean, his resume just, it goes and goes and goes and goes. Star Trek II, Krull, Star Trek III, you know, Cocoon.
Aliens.
Aliens, yeah, Commando, Captain EO. He did Captain EO.
Hold on. Pause there. He did the score for Commando?
Yep. No, Commando, 1985.
Okay. Well, nobody's perfect. God rest his soul anyway.
I've heard a lot of people say like, hey guys, don't forget 48 Hours. I've never seen 48 Hours, but there's a lot of people who are like, don't forget that one. That was an awesome score.
Well, and he did a lot with Spielberg and like Amblin. I mean, you have Balto, American Tail, and American Tail. Land Before Time.
Oh, yeah.
Willow, Field of Dreams, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Glory, Rocketeer.
Avatar, too.
Yeah, Avatar, Sneakers. I mean, Sneakers. Oh, that's a great score right there. Casper, Apollo 13. Apollo 13.
He did Braveheart and Apollo 13. They came out a month apart. He got nominated for both of them. So.
And he also did Casper. And in 1995, he did Braveheart, Casper, Apollo 13, Jade, Jumanji, and Balto.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing output.
It's ridiculous. So Mask of Zorro, too, the first new Zorro one, which has, again, great themes. So yeah, it just goes and goes and goes and goes. And yeah, it's very tragic. He'll definitely be missed.
Yep, agreed. And I know John and I haven't actually discussed this yet, but I'm sure that we will cover his work in greater detail in the not too distant future.
So. Yeah.
All right. One more thing, you know, True Detective. I didn't watch it, but the first two episodes directed by Justin Lin, who is now directing as we speak. Well, not as we speak, but as you listen, is directing a new Star Trek movie, Star Trek Beyond, which is shooting in Vancouver. I don't know if you guys have seen the pictures and the tweets, people saying like, oh my God, Simon Pegg and John Cho just came out of Jurassic World, you know, which makes, like, I want to know, like, what was their reaction to Jurassic World? Do you think they liked it? I don't know. Anyway, did they see it in 3D or not? I'm very curious about that.
Oh, for a second, I thought you meant they came out like they just finished making. And I'm like, they weren't in Jurassic World.
No, they went to see it because they're all in Vancouver and they're like, hey, you want to go see Jurassic World? Yeah, let's go see Jurassic World. Yeah. See what's up with that movie. So yeah, I want to know if they all like got together to watch True Detective and then, you know, went over to Justin Lin and were like, hey, good job.
Yeah.
Oh, they did. They totally did. You know they did. Yeah. Everyone watched True Detective except for the three of us.
Yes.
And I'm going to, like, as soon as we are done recording this. So So yes, there is a new Star Trek movie with new Star Trek creators currently in production. So Exciting times. Yes. Anyway, well, it's been fun talking about Tomorrowland this week. I knew we were talking about something. But that's not all that we're talking about this week on Trek FM. So here's a taste of what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And I'm wondering if it's because the comic book writers didn't understand what the filmmakers were doing, or whether it was because the comic book writers wrote themselves into a corner, or whether it was because the comic book writers wanted to open their stories up to more possibilities.
Earl Grey.
we divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The orb.
This year, opening for five-year mission is... Dalrock. They'll rock your world, Bajoran style.
The ready room.
I do like that he just drops out of the sky naked. That is the perfect way to introduce Q. And then just before we cut to the credits, they get this great shot of him looking up at Picard, and he's like, hey, what up?
To the journey!
My question is, what would Janeway have in place of banana pancakes? Because that's B'Elanna's thing. Would Janeway's be coffee ice cream?
I was just about to say coffee ice cream. My lips were forming the syllables to say coffee ice cream. Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I know that both of us will come out of it okay, but since Matthew is not used to sparring with either of us, I'm afraid that he's going to be a bloody mess lying on the floor of the 602 Club.
The 602 Club.
You know, that's Bryce Dallas Howard's decision. She wanted to do that. She made the decision that the character wouldn't get out of these heels, which to me said... This character has changed some. Like, she has learned some things, but there are some things about her that are not going to change.
Literary Treks.
You know, Bajor getting through the occupation with its faith, and this faith kind of coming back in Cardassia and helping them kind of get through, you know, their darkest hour.
Yeah, I definitely do like kind of how it's come full circle.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I tried different action figures. I tried Black Widow. I tried the Black Widow from the Hot Toys Black Widow. Too small. It wouldn't work with
really?
The other action. Yeah, it didn't photograph quite.
But tell everyone why you're photographing action figure.
Women at Warp.
So she definitely knows cats. I say that right off the bat.
She knows cats and Bones.
Yes, definitely. Of course Bones would get annoyed with all the cat fur.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows, including Earl Grey, and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. Star Trek Beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts, like Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, the Windows Phone, or, you know, Apple. You can hit the subscribe button, and that helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. You can rate us. Either 5 stars or 3.5 stars, depending on what you think.
5 stars.
Yep, that joke won't make sense. We're telling this like they told Tomorrowland. That joke won't make sense to anyone until tomorrow when they listen to the 602 Club. You can also download the file straight from our website, or you can get the RSS link there as well. So, yeah, go find us. Another way that you can help us out is by supporting the network on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm, where you can become a patron. You'll find all of our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can fill out the form on trek.fm/contact, or you can leave us a voicemail. Just look on the sidebar of the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can find the network on Twitter at trekfm. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, where you'll also find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference into the search field, that's B-A-B-E-L, or go to our website at trek.fm and click on the discussion tab on the menu bar. Darren, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, if they want to listen to me talk about Star Trek, which they might based off your clientele, they can obviously listen to me every week on Earl Grey, our Star Trek The Next Generation podcast here on Trek FM, which comes out on Tuesdays. And you'll hear me with my co-host Daniel Prue and Philip Gilfus. But if they wanted to chat about science fiction, Tomorrowland, you know, or just that bad cheesy 80s stuff that just they somehow got away with, they can best reach me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. Or if they want to read about other podcasts I've been on or my Stormtrooper adventures, they can find that on my website, drsci-fi.com.
Excellent. John, what about you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, and you can find me also on a weekly podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my friend Craig, where we don't really focus on anything. We're sort of like cats of the nerd domain.
That's good. That's good. I like that. As always, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit with Drew, or you can find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Track Stars Off Topic and Commentary Track Star Babies. You can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can find all of us on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or you can email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Darren. We really appreciate it. Yeah. It was cool to finally get you on the show and get your perspective on things. Now we've had all of our Earl Greyers on Commentary Trek Stars.
Makes us so sound very old when you say it that way.
T-Trekkers.
You know.
T-Trekkers.
Our next Jenners.
There you go. Next Jenners. Okay. But yeah, thank you very much, and you're welcome back anytime. And John and I will be back next week to begin a new series on Maurice Hurley. Hey, he's the next gen guy. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring the 602... No, shit, because I stole the copy from the 602 Club. Oh, should I start that over?
60 Track Club.
Whatever. It's all the same thing.